Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, as the song says, we got respect for you. Boy, we sure do wish that the VA and Department of Defense would have respect for all the military personnel. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Doug.
Yeah, this is Doug Rocky. Are you joining us tonight? Denise, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and we've got several people to call in that went on the trip to D.C. Let's see if they answer up. Anybody on the line right now?
Steve.
Steve's on the line.
Peter Green's here.
Okay, anybody else yet? Okay, I'm going to ask Peter to kind of review what we went up for, why we went up, what we heard in the RAC meeting, and then why we went to the Hill. Peter?
Wow, you sure do ask a lot of a foggy brain.
Well, you know, when we have to ask the people that were there, Peter, that's the best thing we can do.
No, I understand. There were probably three main goals that the majority of us there went there for. One was to hear the RAC meeting and to give our comments, which were very strong and powerful, and some of them were tear-jerkers, to be sure. The other two things that we were there for was to lobby the Senate side for CDMRP funding for FY15, and we managed to get 11 signatures on our dear colleague letter to support that funding, so we're looking good for FY15 there. And then the other thing that we did that was very important was go to lobby for co-sponsors for H.R. 4261, which is the Gulf War Health Research Reform Act of 2014. This right now is probably the foremost problem that we are facing. The issue is that the VA secretary has gutted this advisory committee, which is supposed to be an independent overview oversight committee. They're not responsible for doing research, but they are responsible for reporting on research to the VA secretary. The VA secretary has gutted this. He has essentially fired everybody that is not a VA appointee come September 30th unless we get this legislation pushed through. And there are now people involved with the VA who are on the Hill currently and actively working against this legislation. So it's really important right now. We're at a point where we need more co-sponsors on the House side. We need everybody calling their representatives and getting them aware of this, because the administration is working against us, and there just aren't enough of us to go around. So we all need to be heard.
Okay, and on H.R. 42-6, on our bill, I'd like to just mention the big thing that it does is, instead of the VA appointing all 12 members of the committee and the chairman, it would change that the VA would only be able to put 3 people on that committee, 4 people would be selected by the VA House Committee, and that would be the chairman and the ranking member. 4 members would be chosen by the Senate side, again, the chairman and ranking member. It does not delineate how they will be nominated to be selected, but I am sure that they would look at all reputable scientists that are versed in the area of chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, IBS, been involved with Gulf War illness. And that would include anybody that sits with the National Academy of Science. It's not spelled out that way that they would be included, but we know that when Congress looks at people put on a committee, they want the best. And this change was using a model of the Department of Education, one of their advisory committees. So that's what it was modeled after. And I have no problem with congressmen and senators being involved. They need to be, because they provide the oversight. And in fact, it was through all the oversight hearings we had in the 90s and on into 2000s, with reports from the committee going to the Oversight and Investigation Committee at the House, they're the ones that should provide some oversight. And I think they have a right and a responsibility to nominate good people to be on that committee and make it not just a VA committee. The Agent Orange committee ended up being just VA people, you know, totally VA appointees. And it, you know, really didn't move the issue. Didn't really look at research or anything like that. I mean, we're in a new era of science and research. We have people working in the civilian field for chronic fatigue and fibro around the world. And, you know, we have some definite researchers that we've pulled from the civilian chronic fatigue to be involved with the Gulf War illness. And basically, that's the big thing the law does. The other thing is it goes back and reemphasizes in stronger language to get that study on MS, on Gulf War veterans. That's been in a law before, hasn't been done yet. So that law, that bill would strengthen those requirements for the recommendations and things that were in legislative language before that haven't been carried out. And so I have a problem with those that are lobbying against us, saying they don't want any congressmen or political people involved. You know, we got all these bills and acts of law for the Gulf War veterans by going to the Congress. And they have heard us and they've responded. Maybe not as fast and as direct as we'd like them to, but they have. And to say that you don't want them involved in selecting people just doesn't make sense to me. Do we have another comment, Steve?
Yeah, I know everybody's been closely watching what's going on in the news with the VA. Do we really want the VA in charge of research like they were for Vietnam or anything at this point? We do need the independency to keep us moving forward so that we don't have to wait the 40-plus years that our fellow veterans of Vietnam had to wait. It is key to keep this thing out of their control, this H.R. 4261.
Right. You know, I've been debating whether we have a bad guy at the top or if we have people right below him. And this affects Gulf War veterans, not just the wait times at the different VAs and the gaming they did, but this relates to, you know, doing the right thing by a research committee, which they haven't. Number two, doing the right thing by educating the doctors about the Gulf War illness and the research that is showing up through our CDMRP funding. The VA research for a long time funded things that were, you know, majority was related to stress being the cause of all these physical symptoms of Gulf War illness. And so we have a right to be upset with the VA. And, you know, by watching them, and the ones that have not gone to D.C. to a hearing or to a RAC meeting or were involved in any of those hearings in the 90s and, you know, to 2000 with the Oversight and Investigation Committee, I don't think they're fully aware. And it's up to those of us that have been involved to speak up and try to set issues straight. We had to go to CDMRP for funding because the VA Research and Development Office was, like I said, overall looking at stress and anything to do with stress with Gulf War illness. And by going to CDMRP, we've gotten excellent research. Some of them have been VA researchers that have gotten funded, Dr. Ron Bach up in Minneapolis. And Doug, I know that you have a feeling that we don't need the research. I have to say that research like for Dr. Ron Bach showing the hypercoagulation and looking for some treatment on that is very, very important. I think the research that's been done by Dr. Haley, Dr. Roberta White in Boston, Georgetown, Dr. Bronick, have shown that there are changes in the Gulf War veteran's brain, and it's not caused by PTSD. There is a study going on at Minneapolis VA, the MEG study, that, you know, is able to map the brain damage And they've already said in meeting with the VA RAC that there is a different area of the brain involved from PTSD, from different injuries to the Gulf War veterans. And that is the kind of thing that we didn't have. We didn't have these diagnostic testing being done for the Gulf War vets. Yes, we need to move that forward rapidly so that more vets can get that testing so that they don't have to battle with the VA. The VA doctors need to be informed. The claims adjudicators need to be informed so that there's more uniformity. There's no education going on for the doctors, the healthcare providers, and for the adjudicators on our claims. You know, that's a whole other area that we need to work on. But if we lose the RAC, I feel like we're stepping back in time to where we started from. The biomarker research that Dr. Klimas and Dr. Broderick is doing down in Florida, I mean, what if you could go in and get a blood draw and they do the biomarkers and say, yes, you do have this. Do the brain work, the brain diagnostic studies, and say, yes, you do have it. They can no longer deny the physical changes that have occurred in us. So, you know, there may have been treatment for nerve agent exposure. There wasn't any treatment for bad vaccines. No treatment for PB pills and to reverse that effect. No treatment for depleted uranium. And so, Doug, I'd like to ask you, you know, why you feel we don't need the research anymore.
I think we still need the research, but it's also at the time of the focus. One of the problems we keep running into is I've ran into individuals where they say, well, we don't have any treatment, we don't have anything to do, we can't even confirm that there were the exposures that didn't happen because there's no research that's been done on that. Depleted uranium is a perfect example. They've said over and over again today that there were no health effects or anything else. When we go to the internal documents that I was given, it totally confirmed it. And as far as use of depleted uranium and what needed to respond, all that was ended after Shinseki personally, I'm going to repeat, General Shinseki personally signed the order for mandatory medical care in depleted uranium. Now, you're absolutely correct, and this is one of the things you and I both participated in the studies, and we've been down there. What is the effective treatment for it? We know for the radiation cataracts, you have cataract surgery. We know for the neurological damage, there's not a whole lot you can do other than pain meds. You can put your, you know, use a TENS unit. Use the pyro muscle massage, what's called myofascial release, to help all this stuff. But yeah, I mean, we need it. One of the problems, I guess, that bothers me is with all the good research that's been done and more research that needs to be done, we have individuals within the military are disavowing any connection between the toxic exposures and health effects, even though that's all listed in the internal memorandums. It's a political quagmire. We definitely need the research, but at the same time, we need definitive care and treatment because it's like for the same thing with Agent Orange. You can't keep waiting. You know, you couldn't wait and wait and wait and wait and wait for something on Agent Orange. And then finally, when they started coming up with ideas and acknowledging it, well, by that time, the numbers that have died and numbers are sick and still getting sick gets to be staggering.
One of the things that's being done, two things, number one, there's been interest in hyperbaric chambers. Now, in Oklahoma, they are providing that free of charge for the veteran if their child's affected or if their wife. Dr. Johnson down in Texas, in Dallas, offers that, but it's quite costly.
He's been doing that for a long time, though,
yeah.
Because him and, you know, those guys down in Texas and Dallas have been leading the way on environmental health and Gulf War illness for as long as I can remember. They've kept us alive by the stuff they did for us. There's no doubt about it. Bob Haley, incredible research. I mean,
and then
we've
the
all
other thing
that
we have funded now is the study that was brought up in 99 at the CDC conference we were at, Doug, where we had people that had gone through Hubbard treatment. They had done some of that independently, and there was a place here in Denver, too, that was doing it. But that is now a funded study, and hopefully that will prove and get it published that detoxification, saunas, all the things they offer, the supplements, would help. And that would, you know, be another push to get that offered, you know, more throughout the nation for the Gulf War vets. These are things that have never really been written up for use on Gulf War veterans. I know that there was a study just out that gang cyclosporine would help with a rat model with MS. We need to look at that. Like Dr. Haley said, we need to look at all the drugs out there on the shelf right now. Use the animal model to treat the animal and see if there is good results from it and no hazard to it, and then be able to move it into the treatment modality. This is all being hung up because the VA does not accept that there is physical damage. I mean, they are starting with some of the studies they're doing at Orange, New Jersey right now of repeating these fMRIs for chronic fatigue. And for the mitochondrial study, some type of follow-up to Dr. Glom's study. But if we have mitochondrial cell damage, we need to push, along with civilian chronic fatigue groups, to really fund this appropriately and get the answers as quick as we can so that we can find treatment. Just saying treatment... The VA, as we know, will give you pain meds out the door. They'll give you antipsychotics. Some of the VAs will get you acupuncture, massage reflex techniques that are used also. They'll treat the diseases that you present with. They do treat, you know, according to the standard medical
protocols. But that doesn't necessarily apply to what we have here because... And this is what's critical. I mean, the ACNI and everybody's reported, and we get continuous reports. I mean, the last 48 hours have been a whirlwind, a nightmare of medical problems and denied and delayed care that we've heard over and over and over again. I think the frightening part is, that, and this comes back to the fundamental key issue, we knew the health effects are there. The military manuals confirm the health effects. So there's no question at all. We saw the physiological effects on the battlefield. We saw the physiological effects since. We continuously hear day in and day out of more physiological effects. At the same time, they're denying. The question I keep running up to, and I wish General Shinseki would come up and answer it to me, is even though he personally acknowledged the health effects and issued the medical care directive for depleted uranium, didn't have it. For example, I mean, all of us on this, the radio show, and we've been involved in supporting the family of Private First Class Aaron Barnes from the 101st Airborne, again, who was exposed to depleted uranium, had all the health effects, died of cancer, and again, the VA over in Iowa City said there was no connection, and again, we have the direct connection. It's frightening to me on all this stuff continuously happening over and over and over again.
Well, it started with the denials.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody's been in denial, even though the internal memorandum confirmed the health effects from the get-go for everything under the sun. What we didn't understand, and I think Andres Kornegibov and Asa Durakovich are probably, and they're, you know, Andres is gone now, are probably two of only a handful of physicians that ever understood the synergistic relationship and synergistic interactions. And I remember at the CDC research conference on Gulf War Illness in 99, Andres was yelling at the top of his lungs, trying to get everything done, trying to get the reports accurate, because the problem we ran into and we still run into, the reports that got to the public and the reports that get to the physicians are substantially different than what we actually saw on the field, on the ground, in theater, and the casualties. I mean, Denise, look what happened. You were up in the house, I think, quoting directly from the medical manuals on the PB pills.
Yeah.
They didn't even want to hear it. I mean, you're quoting directly from their own research report, their own medical report, and they didn't want to hear it, correct?
Yeah, that was back in the 90s. I can't remember the exact date, but it was one of the hearings in the Veterans Affairs Committee. Although I can say that I think we've had a lot more congressmen and senators if they're informed. Now, that's up to our vets to get them informed and inform them of what we want done with our bills. I think there's a lot more support than people realize.
Can I speak on the TV?
Sure. Go ahead.
Most of my fellow colleagues that went to the Hill recently know, I also went through the RISC program right afterwards. And the reason I adamantly want to make sure that this stays pretty much out of the VA's hands and independent is a specific doctor up there was telling me that TB is okay, and he actually uses it with some of his patients. And I said, well, if that's the case, then how about you take as many as we've taken, get exposed to what I've been exposed to, and then go ahead and do research on yourself. He said, no, I won't do that. So obviously if he won't take the pills or anything else, it shows that, you know, he has two-faced on the thing.
Now, PB is definitely used for myasthenia gravis, the treatment it has for a long time. But that's completely different for the reason that PB was given during Desert Storm. PB was given to Desert Storm with the anticipation that Iraq would use the chemical weapons that they had, the nerve agents they had. And then we would administer the antidotes, at which time the antidotes would be able to reverse the locked-up synaptic junctions from the PB and thus give some stuff to restore at least minimal function once you get hit by nerve agents. That's completely different than treatment for myasthenia gravis. I mean, there's no relationship at all between these two, so that's nuts.
And the only background on PV was the use with Selman, not sarin or any of the other agents that we were exposed to.
And this is a doctor that's directly involved with most of the research up there.
Which doctor was it?
Denise, I don't know if you want me to say it or not.
Go ahead. He's been to DCVA. Dr. Lee.
It was Meehan?
Lee,
Dr.
Yeah.
Lee?
Really?
Yes.
Meehan has seen all health effects of Meehan, definitely confirmed my nerve agent exposures. He looked at the MRI stuff that we had done down in Texas, and he confirmed it, and then he ran through me all the tests and confirmed the physiological damage from the nerve agents, confirmed nerve agent exposures I had in Iraq, in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. And so at that time, we're sitting there, so he was a strong guy. Now at the same time, and the guy has since been fired, we did have a number two in environmental health from the VA headquarters that came over during my appointment and tried to make all kinds of weird claims, but thank God he was sent packing, and he's been since fired out of the VA. So I think there's what we run into, and this is the same thing. This is where the research bothers me. The physician, the people that do get the research contracts that are asked to do the research, they're totally competent, capable of doing it. But what they are not given is they're not given the internal epidemiology, they're not given the internal reports, they're not given the internal research reports that have always existed, and then they're not given the exposure data that we did have. And we didn't have a lot because, as everybody knows, that the records were all destroyed. The same thing with the chemical logs. And Denise, you and I are both involved in this years ago. General Franks gave the order, this back in '98 or '99, to destroy the chemical logs in Florida at the time when that Marine officer was testifying at Hill for Chris Shays. And so the guy that went and destroyed them called us and said, I've been ordered to destroy these. What do I do? And, well, you know, not a whole lot you can do. You got to follow orders. But what we've had is all the way through deliberate denials, deliberate delays, deliberate destruction. We had some depleted uranium research going here at the University of Illinois. And so I called the researcher up and I said, have you had this? Have you had this? And he said, no, 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 no. And I said, how about asking for the actual reports? And he said, well, they told me if I needed anything, they'd given it to me. I mean, so there's a problem where we have the researchers set up critical research on the effects of DU in the neurological system. And what we already know on the epidemiology and what we do know from the research we did from on site, I mean, Denise, you were seeing all the neurological aberrations from the chemicals and the DU while you were in Iraq on the front line treating them, correct?
Yeah. All right.
So, I mean, the research is critical. So how the question I've got is, and I know Jim Binns and the guys are great people, how do we ensure the Department of Defense gives the researcher access to all the data and doesn't limit their information?
In a centralized database that's not being held at the VA for all this research, doctors to access, but the VA will take out what they don't want you to know.
Well, that's what Jim Binns reported in his testimony, you know, in trying to keep the RAC, keeping the RAC as we need it. I mean, that was clear as a bell in his testimony before Congress.
Well, as far as what we can do, Doug, you know, if you have all this gathered up, make me a copy. We'll make copies and scan it and get it out to every vet, too.
Well, it's the VA's, I mean, you know, it's the VA's own data. I mean, you know, we got incredible guys that have been up there collecting this data and sending it out in emails.
But I do agree that something has to be done about our care and about our claims. And what I'm going to say to everybody is if you're getting the runaround on your care, getting adequately diagnosed, getting adequate testing, be it that or be it your claims, and you're getting a runaround, not only should you pursue, you know, at the local level and providing your notice of disagreement and go to appeal status, I think it's critically important to provide the Senate and Veterans Affairs Committee information, exact information of what's going on. Not only that, but your representative, your own representative, and your two senators. No matter what they do, at least inform them. And then the next thing, besides the local steps of going up the chain with the patient advocate and the administrator of the hospital and the chief of staff, of the medical staff, is, you know, also to provide that information higher up. And, you know, people are ignoring using reports to the OIG. If there was reports coming in from all the Gulf War vets across the country that are struggling, you know, to the OIG office and to the senators and the House in huge numbers. I mean, it's communicating with them of what's going on with your own situation. But if they get 100, 200, 400, 500, 1,000, 10,000, and, you know, then we have to look at getting the media back informed and back involved. It was whistleblowers that came out that exposed the wait time. We need to look for whistleblowers of their frustration with the Gulf War illness and how it's being handled medically and in the claim situation.
No. Yeah, Penny, oh, sorry. This is Peter. On that note with the claims process, I'm going through a claims review myself right now, and my VSO, she pulled up a manual for me called the M21-1MR.
Right.
That's the actual manual that the raters use to interpret the CFR 38. It gives them instructions explicitly on how to rate different maladies. It has a section that is specific to Gulf War veterans, and one of those things that it requires is that any presumptive service connection that is granted should be given an additional ratings code that starts with 88. So, and then the second part of that number would indicate the part of the body. So, for instance, I was service connected for migraines incurred during the Gulf War. My service connection code should be 8881-8801. Instead, it just says migraine headaches 1801. So if somebody were to search the database, they would not, my headaches would not come up as Gulf-related disability.
Right.
I'm not going to drop any names, but I'm going to say that I have a reputable source that has looked at some other Gulf War veterans claims, and their 800 or 8800 codes are also missing. So we may have another completely different issue on our hands.
You know, one thing that I got to say, Bernie Sanders...
Before we go on, Doug, let's have him repeat the manual number.
Yeah.
And the code.
Okay, the manual number is M21-1MR. If you do a search for it, the VA actually has it on their website.
M21-1MR?
M21-1MR. I think it's part four that delineates the whole 8800 part.
So it's the M21-1 and part four. And we should be...
M21-1MR, part four. Compensation. Yeah, there's all kinds of compensation. I've got the exact data line. But,
and the code that we should be showing, and everybody needs to be hearing this, is 888 code.
Right. You should have two codes. You should have one that, like, for instance, migraine headaches is 8100. A Gulf War-related migraine headache would be 8881-8100. So they're completely omitting the Gulf War illness presumptive code.
Now, are you trying to get that corrected, and what do you suggest that we do?
I currently have an appeal going through DRO. I'm waiting for... some investigation at some other facilities to see if this is either an isolated incident at my Vero or whether or not it's perhaps a nationwide problem.
I think it is nationwide.
Mine either.
So if I do, you know, if I do get some confirmation that other veterans are not getting this, I'm prepared to pull the trigger on an IG complaint while the fire is hot.
I think that's a good idea.
And I'm 90% overall, and most of mine are presumptives. Actually, all of them are.
And they're not coded 888?
No.
Well, I have only known a few Gulf War vets that have had the 888 code. So I would suspect that this is a nationwide problem, and it's probably fouling up any data that they would pull up through the VA for us.
Well, and here's an added twist that makes it really suspicious. I put in the claim for body joint pain. They did not only did not give me the Gulf War illness proper rating code, they rated me for 0% with fibromyalgia.
Right.
If they had used the correct Gulf War illness code, they would have had to have made the rating analogous to rheumatoid arthritis, which would have been, in my case, a minimum of a 40% disability rating, which would have increased me to 100%. Ironically, the C&P examiner specifically stated that I do not have fibromyalgia, but the rater gave me that rating anyway.
I'm looking at the manual right now in subpart 4, chapter 5, and this is frightening. Guidelines for, and this is all quote, I'm going to read this verbatim. Guidelines for evaluating evidence. When making decisions or taking actions on claims that require a rating decision, the Rating Veteran Service Representative, RVSR, must apply the provisions of all pertinent, one, laws, two, regulations, three, schedules for radiant disabilities, four, policy statements, five, procedures, six, administrative decisions, seven, secretary's decision, eight, court of appeals for veterans' claims precedents, and other legal precedents governing the Department of Veteran Affairs. Well, it makes it real clear. We got policy statements, administrative decisions, and secretary's decisions right in there. I mean, make it loud and clear. And so when the secretary and everybody disavow any connection between the toxic exposure and health effects, which are documented in their own internal reports, that decision is flawed. So the whole thing is not just independent, but when we come down, policy statements, administrative decisions, secretary's decisions, that means Shinseki's decision. no wonder the kids can't get anything through. And the other thing, too, we got to remember, and this was said this morning on Meet the Press, loud and clear on Meet the Press this morning, the reason it's all there is money, 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 money. The guy said on Meet the Press that there is totally inadequate amount of funds or money to handle all of the casualties we've incurred and what they would, and proper treatment, what proper treatment would entail. Oh, I'm sorry, guys, my skin crawls.
Well, you know, my feeling about this is the budget for the VA has been increasing. It has been increasing over the past several years. And I will not give them the excuse that we don't have the money when they won't even apply their regulations correctly for Gulf War veteran claims. You know, and when they don't apply the right diagnostic code with the 888 so that when they go to pull up data, that they have the Gulf War veterans identified. I'm fighting my claim right now. They have me down as a Gulf War era. And I'm going, no, my DD-214 shows clearly. I served in theater. Don't say I'm era.
You're on the front lines, Denise, at Long Beach, Charlie.
You know, so the first couple of sentences, I saw red. Yes, I'm Vietnam era, but I am a Gulf War veteran, not a Gulf War era veteran. And so I will fight them on that, much less all the other stuff. But I think that we have discovered the problem with the data collection for Gulf War vets. I mean, we know they did away with the Grievous. They did the pre and post 9/11, which kind of dilutes what we find in Gulf War veterans that served overseas. You know, it's astounding. It's a malpractice, malfeasance, the whole works. And the Gulf War veteran community need to find their voice instead of going around and around talking about their symptoms. You know, the VA says that these are presumptive. I mean, going around and around, I can see if you found something that helps, some drug supplement, you know, put that info out. But as long as we go around and around complaining of our symptoms, complaining of our claims, we delay effective action. We delay getting positive action to get a positive reaction. Does that make sense, guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the, pulling it up right now. I got the 2008 Griffiths report in front of me. And this is from February of 2008. For Desert Storm, the number of service members in February of 2008 that they acknowledged were Desert Storm was 696,842. The estimated living veterans from Desert Storm as of February of 2008 was 618,283. The claims file as of February of 2008 for all people that served in Desert Storm was 278,713.
Jeez.
Claims process was 241,434, and they had awarded service connection CNP benefit to 221,960 Operation Desert Storm veterans as of February of 2008, and they had denied 30,737.
So then they went and threw out that data collection and didn't have any more after 2008, correct, Doug?
I've never seen another report after 2008. That was the last full one that I saw that Mark put out.
When we kept complaining of data, then about, oh, how long has it been now? Over a year ago, that they put out at a RAC meeting this pre-9/11 and post-9/11 report, which, you know, doing the pre-9/11 all as a group and not separating Gulf War vets in any form, you know, just dilutes the problem. It doesn't pop out at you of the true problem.
Well,
so
I'm looking
these are the games that they played on us.
After 2000, I'm looking here in September 2011 report. It's called Analysis of VA Healthcare Utilization Among Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation New Dawn Veterans. Now, we have to make it loud and clear. All this stuff got to the veterans because of Paul Sullivan. God bless Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to make it loud and clear that Paul was the one that got this out to everybody. So here they're doing some epidemiology for real on the individuals in 2011. And in 2011, what they were acknowledging for OIF, OEF, and OND, they had 1,353,627 separated veterans. I mean, separated veterans. 711,986, or 53% of those, had gone to the VA for medical care. That's a staggering number. And so we're looking at this all when we look at it. And then when we come down, and we've talked about this before, the ICD-9 codes, I mean, it's all here. Infectious and parasitic diseases, 107,256, or 15%. Malignant cancers, 9,367, for 1.3%. Benign cancers, 44,290, at 6%. Disease of endocrine, nutritional, metabolic systems, 220,268 individual diagnoses at 31%. Leukemia, 24,894 cases of leukemia, 3.5%. The PTSD is staggering number, 367,749, or 52%. Neurological, and we've talked about that, and on the internet with all of the Facebook stuff, the neurological problems are staggering. 310,360 individual diagnoses, or 44%. Circulatory, and Denise, we've been over this, and you've been hollering about the cardiac and the circulatory forever and ever and ever. You did the work on the hypocoagulation and all this. 147,267, 21%. This should be seen in these healthy cohort groups. Respiratory, the respiratory, 182,783, or 26%. The digestive, 253,450, at 36%. Funeral unitary, 103,000. The rash, 147,617, or 21%. Muscular skeletal, this is fibromyalgia. This is all the connective tissue, everything else. 396,552 individuals, 56%. It's staggering. So the epidemiology is there. So when the IOM came back, and it's what, a little over a year ago, totally confirmed it was mobile chemical sensitivity, definitely all the toxic exposures nailed everybody. But I think this is where the research is essential. What we're seeing is the medical care for individual exposures has been known for one thing. We're seeing complex synergistic exposures where sometimes the exposures could be below what was seen before would cause a medical problem, but when combined together is synergistic, so 1 plus 1 does not equal 2. 1 plus 1 equals 7 or 8. I mean, so how do we get by this? I mean, the diagnoses are there. The medical effects are there on literally several million people when you put all these together from OIF, OEF, you put the Balkans together, you put Desert Storm together, there's almost 2 million. It's staggering numbers.
Well, all I'm saying is that the VA, if they are being less than honest in collection of data for the Gulf War veterans by not coding it appropriately, by not keeping the records and maintaining them, like the Gervis report, instead of, 08 and then in 2012, I think it was, they came out with pre and post 9/11 data. They're not doing themselves any favors, because if they had that data succinctly and accurately collected, then they can go for more funding. Just to go for more funding without the data being correct is not going to help anyone. You don't know where to put your resources, and the resources may not be used correctly, appropriately, or effectively. And that's what's being said by, the VSOs, is they're not using the resources effectively.
Well, the VSOs have not been given even the minimal resources that they need to do it. And the other thing, frightening thing on my own VSO, and what I've heard over and over and over again, if they know it exists, they're not going to give it to the veteran that comes in unless the veteran has it. And then the other things we ran into with the VSO is not going to submit it if it's not approved politically correct before the submission. it's a stack on the deck before the, you know, the claim gets up to the regional offices.
Yeah. Peter or Steve, do you have comments to make? Doug and I have been talking for a while here. We don't want to neglect y'all's comments. Peter, are you still with us?
Looks like he's
on. Sorry, I had you on mute, Denise. Sorry. I just want to add one thing for those that might have a keyboard or a pen and paper handy that do want to look up this 8800 code. I've got the full designation for it. It is M21-1MR, Part 4, Section D, Part 16, Subsection D. And it's pretty obvious.
Okay, you want to repeat that one more time so everybody can get it written down?
All right, here we go. M21-1MR, Part 4, Section D, Delta, Part 16, Subsection D. The Part 16 is called Granting Service Connection for Qualifying Disabilities.
Okay. Hope everybody got that written down, and maybe we can put it on the notes for the show tonight also, Doug. Because a lot of people I've known of that manual have looked at it before and kind of set it aside, but it's good to bring that back up again and point that out. Steve, are you there with us?
Anybody else that'd like to call in, please call in 888-874-4888. Please join us. This is open discussion like we've been doing the last several weeks. 888-874-4888. And then once you call in, they get you on, just speak right up because we have no way to know you're there unless you speak up for us.
And we have about, 13 minutes left in the program. So I am going to again ask people, please call your representatives in D.C. offices. You can find them by going to www.house.gov. And you press on your representative's little icon up there. Go to your state, figure out which one's your representative. Call them. On our Go For Illnesses Facebook, we even have a couple of phone scripts to go through with them in case you're uncomfortable doing that. Give you an actual script to talk to you about, talk to them about our bill 4621. When you talk to them, you've got to make the ask. Okay, and the ask is, we want you to co-sponsor. Will you get on this bill as a co-sponsor? We also need calls to our two senators because we're trying to get them to do a mirror bill, the exact same bill on the Senate side, so we can work both sides concurrently and get this into law. We got to get it through the Hill, both sides, to make this happen. Again, on that side, on the Senate, you want them to be aware of the bill in the House. Ask them if they're interested in, you know, initiating this as a bill on the Senate side, or at least being a co-sponsor on the Senate side if we get people to introduce it. Keep notes. Let us know. We're on Facebook on Guffor Illnesses page. So get an account for Facebook. Get on with us. Help us. We're going to have to do a lot more work because there's a lot of problems out there, specifically with claims. We spent a few minutes of time talking about those today. And all I can say is, having been up to the Hill, having talked to the House Veterans Affairs and Senate Veterans Affairs people and benefits, they do not understand the details of what we're talking about. When they ask for the claims backlog, they're looking across the nation. They may have it broken down by regional office. They want to know how many are on a notice of disagreement or an appeal status. They have no idea how many of those are Gulf War veteran claims. They have no idea if they're being rated wrongly against the manuals and the regulation unless we start informing them. Make a copy of your claim. Write it out on a cover sheet of what you see is going wrong with your own claim And if you've been on our pages and hear that this is happening routinely, you know, make a mention of that. You know, I'm hearing this from other Gulf War vets. This is part of the problem with the backlog in the appeals process is the Gulf War veteran claims. They have no breakdown up on the Hill. And I asked them, I said, do you have a breakdown by Gulf War veterans of how many claims have been submitted by each VARO, how many went to notice of disagreement, and how many are on appeals? Ask them to get that data from the VA. I don't even know if the VA can provide it at this point with all the voting areas. But at least, you know, specify an action they can do. Do an investigation on this. Ask the VA to provide this data on Gulf War veterans. Do a both on the House and Senate side. Have your complaint known by the patient administration or the patient advocate at your VA facility. The administration needs to be known that you have a problem. Write it down. Be very specific. Doesn't have to be long. Just be very specific of what you see in your own case. The other thing is, you know, in the early years we mentioned going to the OIG. Not too many people remember that. File a letter with the OIG in D.C. with the VA OIG. It can't hurt. And certainly if they get thousands of letters to the VA OIG on this instance, they know they have to do something.
Yeah, that's the best thing. Now, the other thing, too, I want to make this loud and clear. God bless Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders, and his entire staff. I mean, I talked to him this last week. I talked to two of Bernie's staff members, and they were, I mean, couldn't have been better. Bernie's D.C. office for Senator Bernie Sanders, God bless him, he's an angel. His D.C. office phone number is 202-224-5141. Again, Bernie Sanders in Washington, D.C., 202-224-5141. And back home in his home state, in his home state office, it's 802-339-9834. I met Bernie through Denise, I mean, Lynch, back in the 90s when I came out. And God bless him, he's always been in the forefront, him and Chris Shays, and again, Bob Newman, but Bob's gone to the Angels. I mean, incredible, incredible people. And then back in the 70s, Bernie Sanders had a retired two-star general on his staff that was, God bless him, too. But I know that he started getting sick, and I don't know whatever happened to him. So call Bernie and his staff, keep them informed. They can literally guide the way and help us. He's been doing it all along, as long as I can remember. And the staff was totally flustered with what's transpired. I can guarantee that.
You know, we have numbers to call. The VA committee on the Senate side, the House side, they have subcommittees on the House side for benefits, health, and oversight and investigation. You know, these are the committees that do the actual work for all the committee members. And you have a Democratic side and a Republican side. So, you know, you need to get in touch with both sides. We're bipartisan. And keep them informed. You know, if every vet did this little paperwork, just like a letter to their representative or a quick phone call, it doesn't take very long. If the vet can't do it, the family member can. Let's give Peter and Steve another chance.
That's easy enough because, as Denise stated earlier, on Gulf War Illnesses on Facebook, there is already pre-printed forms there that you can just copy and paste to send to your congressmen and senators about these bills to keep them informed about what's going on.
I think maybe we need to make up templates for, you know, just regular information to go to the committee. So, Steve and Peter, maybe you can help us with some template letters.
Absolutely. Anytime.
We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left here, guys.
Did anybody else call in? Don't hear anyone else that called in. Back to you, Doug.
Well, we got 3 or 4 minutes, so, I mean, guys, you have any last suggestions, recommendations? What do we need to do? How to do it? How do we get this? I mean, one of the most flustering things we come into is all the family members that are losing these kids or trying to take care of these kids that are sick or the ones that are dying. I mean, they need our support. I mean, all of us, it seems like it was put up there, and one of you guys or somebody put it up there, it wasn't me, but put up there, it seems like the only people given respect and providing the support to the families and ill vets are the vets themselves and not the leaders that should be doing it. So here's another call to the senior leadership.
I don't think they've heard us, Doug. We've brought about the senior leadership over and over again.
When you started asking that how many years ago? I know you pointed out at IOM back in 99, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a ball of fire at that meeting, I guess.
Admiral Zumwalt was so mad at you when you got done and testified and slam dunked it all shut. I never forget that.
I want to thank Peter and Steve for coming to D.C. and getting involved, and Peter for having served on the CDMRP review panel. We need our veterans' voices. We need our family of the veterans' voices. This is the only thing that will affect positive change. We can go around and complain about our illness, complain about our symptoms, complain about our care, complain about our claims, but until we have a blueprint of action to what we can do to make things happen, then we're going around in one of those little circles that if you keep going in the circle is just the definition of insanity.
I'm going to finish this out and read a poem here. One moment, the individual's walking through a meadow of flowers. The next moment, sons, daughters, husbands, and wives became soldiers. They defended our nation and paid with their life or their health. The citizen soldier, the Minuteman, our nation is built on their willingness to respond to our nation's call. Some fought in the jungles of Vietnam, yet many responded to fighting a distant desert war. They fought with skill and determination to free the land. Then our nation's warriors returned home to parades and parties and joy spread from shore to shore. But when the glow subsided, the warriors remained alone and forgotten. We asked them to fight, and then we forgot to provide them medical care. We research and we study and research for a cause, delay in response through ignorance and fear. Yet the forgotten warrior suffers in silence with honor and hope. For all the forgotten warriors want is medical care.
Doug, I have a suggestion. You've talked to Sanders' office. Let's see if we can get Sanders on the show.
Well, they were loud and clear when I talked to them the other day because I talked to two of his staffers, and I mean, every time they couldn't have been nicer. I mean, incredible people, and I know they yanked the chain right after I talked to them because the info showed up.
And anybody else that has suggestions of who should be on air to talk about Gulf War illness, please, if you have contact with them, if they're willing to come on the air, please let Doug and I know.
Yeah, I mean, Denise and I are the co-hosts for this show, so, I mean, we're welcome everybody to come on anytime, anyhow, family members, veterans of any age, of any service, it doesn't matter. Okay,
thank
I guess
Doug.
That's the end of it tonight. The music's up. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless America, and let's take care of our vets. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks, guys.